All right, well. I guess I have to work for my money. So all of a sudden, Gloria Gaynor's running through my head. Mitchoff, are you going to pay attention now or what? All right, I'm going to call the Board of Directors Mobile Source Committee meeting to order after a year off. First item of business would have Director Mitchoff lead us in the pledge. Roll call, please.
On the roll for the Mobile Source Committee meeting of February 22nd, 2018, Director Abe Koga.
Here.
Director Cutter, Director Groom.
Present.
Director Ju, Director Miley, Director Mitchell.
Here.
Director Sparing, Committee Vice Chair Canepa.
Present.
Committee Chair Haggerty.
Here.
Board Chair Hudson. We have a quorum.
Thank you. Public comment time, which you can speak to anything that's not on today's agenda.
I do have one card from Jan Warren.
Come on down.
Okay. Good morning, Jan Warren, Contra Costa Interfaith Climate Action Network.
Good morning.
I have three things I hope to get to share this morning. In November 2016, my husband and I bought a hybrid and sold our 1996 Corolla, which I only drove locally, and I found out later that the guy we sold it to is driving it from Oakley to the Richmond refinery, which wasn't really good. So we received in January a letter from the Air Board that we could have sold our car to you, and I would have done that the year prior, and so I wish y'all would send it out sooner. There was an article in the East Bay Times this morning from the BART director, Joel Keller, that addresses the lack of the BART parking that we're all aware of. In particular, the Pittsburgh Bay Point Station has 2,035 parking spaces that fill up at 6:25 a.m. We have more people moving to East County because of the housing cost, and so we need to reduce single occupancy cars on our freeways. And I'm wondering how the Air Board can partner with BART and the buses and everybody and come up with some creative solutions, because what works in an urbanized area doesn't work out in East County. Spare the Air has been a good program in the winter to reduce wood smoke. How do we get people out of their cars on Spare the Air days in the summer? I'd love to see a creative marketing extension of Spare the Air that really focuses on the summer. It's one thing to ask groups with different health impacts just to stay indoors. A lot of people actually work outdoors, and so they can't. So if they have health impacts, they're working outdoors with health impacts. So if we can find a great group to come up with some creative ideas to expand Spare the Air in the summer to get people out of their cars, you know, spare the air, save a life. I don't know. I'm not a marketer, but thanks.
Well, actually, we do have a very successful Spare the Air campaign in the summer, and maybe somebody could get her some information on that. It's quite successful, to be very honest with you.
People are getting out of their cars on Spare the Air Day?
Yeah,
oh,
very
okay.
much so.
Good.
And
good.
In fact, even we get cooperation from our media friends, TV, talk about it in the morning that it's a Spare the Air Day. The other thing I want to talk to you about, BART, real quick, and normally we can't respond, but BART, I agree with you that BART doesn't get it in relationship to suburban and urban. They recently turned down a $20 million grant from Catherine Baker was able to get to build parking in Dublin.
Right.
So, you know, I find it a bit humorous that they're got a director writing about needing parking, and yet he was the same director that was the deciding vote to vote against accepting a $20 million grant, which would have completed building the parking garage in Dublin, which is also filling up before 7 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
So,
I
know,
agree with you.
Talking out of both sides of your mouth on that one, not you, him.
Yeah. Right.
So, thank you for coming down. Okay. I appreciate it. All right, approval of the minutes for January 25th. Moved by Mitchoff, seconded by Canepa. Any objection to the motion? Motion passed without objection. Item 4, projects and contracts with proposed grant awards over $100,000.
Good morning, Chair Haggerty and members of the Mobile Source. I'm pleased to present Madeline Storelli, who will be leading us through the items over $100,000.
Good morning, Chairperson Haggerty and members of the Mobile Source Committee. Today, I'll present agenda item number 4, which is a consideration for approval of project for proposed grant awards over $100,000.
If you look at your handouts, we'll continue. We're having a little bit of technical difficulty behind you, so we'll just. Sorry. So Madeline, just
go ahead.
Off
go.
The,
we have
the
it.
Copies.
We have it. Yeah. So oh, you don't.
Yeah. Sorry.
Okay. Marcy broke it.
Okay.
She looks upset.
All right.
Oh, don't mess with Marcy.
All right, so I'll start by providing some background information, then describe the proposed projects, and conclude with staff's recommendations. The district has participated in the Carl Moyer program since it was created in 1998. The program is voluntary and aims to reduce emissions from heavy-duty diesel engines. It is jointly administered by the California Air Resources Board and local air districts. It provides funding to both private and public entities. The Mobile Source Incentive Fund is a district's funding source authorized by Assembly Bill 923, which allows the district to collect an additional $2 DMV registration fee. These funds can be used for eligible Carl Moyer program and lower emission school bus program projects. The Transportation Fund for Clean Air is funded by a $4 DMV registration fee, which is authorized by the Health and Safety Code. On March 1st of last year, the District Board of Directors approved participation in Year 19 of the Carl Moyer Program and authorized the Executive Officer to execute contracts and amendments with grant awards up to $100,000. For your consideration today are two Carl Moyer projects, which will replace three school buses for a proposed allocation of $495,000. These projects will reduce more than 0.3 tons of criteria pollutants per year. More information about the project can be found in Attachment 1 of the staff report. These charts represent the Year 19 Carl Moyer Program funding allocated as of February 1st, 2018, including the projects being considered today. The charts show allocations broken down by equipment category and by county. The funding allocated for these projects is about $11.9 million. More detailed information regarding these projects can be found in Attachment 2 of the staff report. These next charts represent the total Carl Moyer program funding allocated since 2009. Similar to the previous charts, these charts are broken down by equipment category and by county for a total of around $147 million. For the TFCA program, on April 19, 2017, the board allocated about $29 million in TFCA funding for eligible projects in fiscal year 2018 and authorized the executive officer to execute contracts and amendments for projects with grant awards up to $100,000. On August 2, 2017, the board adopted the TFCA policies and evaluation criteria. Of the applications that were evaluated between January 4th, 2018 and February 1st, 2018, there were no eligible projects that proposed an individual grant award over $100,000. These charts show the distribution of TFCA funding for eligible projects evaluated since July of last year. The charts show allocations broken down by equipment category and by county. The total amount of funding on each chart is about $7.6 million. More information about these projects can be found in Attachment 4 of the staff report. In conclusion, staff requests that the committee recommend the Board of Directors approve Carl Moyer program projects with proposed grant awards over $100,000 as identified in Attachment 1 and authorize the Executive Officer to enter into agreements for the recommended projects. This concludes my presentations, and we are happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Any questions? Chair Hudson.
I'm looking at this briefly. The real question is going to come down to fast charging that we discussed it, and I'm trying to remember the subcommittee. I don't know if it was Mobile Source or whatever. Somebody was a little short on charge getting to the next charging station. Do the fast charge?
That would have been me with the $340 tow bill.
The fast charging is
stuck
that
in Lodi.
Is that in this allocation? And going forward, are we going to look at that request to do more fast charge? How do we get it out to the people that are just off the freeway that we're prioritizing this, or do we need to prioritize it more? I can see all kinds of lights coming on.
Yeah, Director Hudson, so this request that's coming through right now, it's for two different school bus projects that are over 100,000. But in the agenda item in the attachment, you do see all the projects that are being approved through the delegation to the air pollution control officer. I don't believe that there are any fast charge projects that are being approved in the last month or so. I believe this year we awarded funding to 10 different projects. That solicitation is currently open. We're accepting applications. And actually, the next presentation, Rainey Chen will actually be presenting how we get the word out and how we're going to be working to expand outreach to do exactly what you're saying.
Anybody else?
Second.
Okay, I have a can Hudson move it?
I'm on it.
Oh, you did? You put yourself on it? That's kind of self-serving, isn't it? moved by Hudson, seconded by Canepa. Is there any objection to the motion? Motion passed without objection. Item 5. Nicely done.
So agenda item 5 is a conversation that we're coming back to based on input from this board of directors and some that we've got as early as 5 minutes ago. So this particular presentation gives you an overview of how we're doing relative to our electric vehicle deployment goals in the region. We talked to you about some of the challenges, how we're doing the outreach.
So can I just get a clarification here?
Yeah.
So is he on the committee because he's the chair? Because he's not listed as on the committee.
He's on because he's the chair.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt your breakfast.
You didn't.
Okay, but is he an ex officio?
There you go.
He's a voting member of the committee, makes up part of the quorum, and can vote with the committee. That's been our practice in the past.
Okay, it's different at MTC.
That's, yeah.
Okay. Maybe we should show him then as a committee member ex officio on the. Thank you. Because then
we can do that.
Then I won't have this confusion, and I wouldn't have interrupted Damien and your breakfast.
I didn't think of it as confusion, just to be
no,
clear.
No, I did. Yeah. Okay. I'm confused. Okay, go ahead, Damien.
I think one of the important things that we have heard from this committee is you want to see where we are now currently relative to both the deployment of infrastructure and vehicles in the region, and then what is our plan to do those things that you've talked about. And Rainey Chang, who's our Technology Implementation Officer, will take us through this presentation this morning.
Thank you.
Thanks, Damien. Chair Haggerty and members of the Mobile Source Committee, good morning.
Good morning.
This update will be about the regional efforts to deploy light-duty electric vehicles and infrastructure. It was quite a topic already just focused on light-duty vehicles and infrastructure, so we're happy to come back and provide more information about the medium and heavy-duty as well.
Already?
Question?
Hold on. Director Metchoff.
Yeah.
I just want to, what do we mean by light-duty? I'm looking ahead, and I'm not sure I'm seeing it.
Basically passenger
okay,
vehicles.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Basically what?
Passenger vehicles.
So it's not a guy who drives around looking to sharpen scissors?
No.
Light.
As Rainey said, we have a second, we've got a second kind of element to this, which is light and heavy duty, and we plan to bring that back in a couple of months, hopefully to coincide with the launch of a new program that we're working on over there.
For the guy who drives around sharpening scissors?
For a guy who's in any truck that's over about a ton, 14,000 pounds.
Is that the guy who drives around sharpening scissors?
I think so.
Okay, what is this with the... I think I'm missing some kind of insider joke or something. Let's move on.
No, it's not. I mean, we all got an email from a guy that lives in Fremont that...
That particular gentleman, he would be in the heavy-duty category.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so, go ahead.
An outline of the talk today. First, we'll give an overview of the status of the electric vehicle market. Next will be an update on the Air District's investments and activities so far. And I also do want to highlight that a lot of this work has been led by the Strategic Incentives Division and Karen and her team. The light duty efforts are being transitioned to the Technology Implementation Office, so this represents kind of a hybrid update between the divisions. So that'll include what we're doing with planning, incentives, as well as partnerships and outreach. And then finally, we'll talk about what we have currently planned and what we're planning to do in the future, how that fits in with other efforts that are happening in the region, and what are our major priorities moving forward. So first, this is a slide of the EVs that are in the market or coming soon in the market, and it shows the various models based on their price as well as their battery range. So you can see there are quite a number that are in the market and also a lot coming soon as well. And then on the electric vehicle supply equipment side, on the charging infrastructure, we wanted to include a slide to just make sure we cover the vocabulary a little bit. So the EVSE, the electric vehicle supply equipment, includes the make-ready infrastructure, which refers to the trenching, the conduit, things, anything from the panel all the way to the charger. The other component is the charger that is what then connects to the vehicle. Level 1, Level 2 and DC fast charging refer basically to how much charging you can do, how much range you can get within a certain amount of time, and they have corresponding costs, which you can see in this table. On the impacts of electric vehicles, this is a graph that came out of some of the Department of Energy National Labs that compares the greenhouse gas emissions for the whole life cycle of the vehicle and the fuel. So fuel extraction, production, or energy production all the way to using it in the vehicle. So you can see that the electric vehicle options are, you know, 1/5 of the greenhouse gas emissions for compared to gasoline vehicles, and this number will continue to get better as we transition to more and more renewable energy. And then we also have the overall U.S. grid as a point of comparison in orange. For the number of vehicles that are in the Bay Area now, this plot shows the Bay Area in dark blue with the number of electric vehicles, and then in the lighter blue overall in California. The dotted orange line represents the goal that was mapped out in 2013. So you can see that we are ahead of that goal, but a lot has changed in the last 5 years as well. So if you look at the current level of EV adoption, it's about 2%, a little less than 2%, of the Bay Area fleet of all the passenger vehicles that are registered in the Bay Area. Last year in the Clean Air Plan, the Air District set a target of getting to 90% of the Bay Area fleet by 2050. So going from less than 2% to 90%, even though we have a lot of progress so far, 40% of electric vehicles in California are in the Bay Area, we still have a long way to go. And at this point, I am going to jump ahead to slide 10 for a little bit before I go back, just to give you a map of the current charging infrastructure and where we are there. So it's about 3,000 publicly available charging stations, including about 150 locations with DC fast charging available. There was a National Renewable Energy Lab report that came out a few years ago that was estimating under a few different scenarios what would the charging infrastructure, what is the needed charging infrastructure to get to support 250,000 electric vehicles. So this 250 estimate is even less than our 90% of the fleet goal, and you can see that we're considerably we're well under that target already.
So could I ask a question just real quick on this map? Do we have at least the level one chargers? Those are those the quick chargers? Okay, what are the quick chargers?
Those would be those DC fast chargers.
Okay. Do we have at least one of those in each city?
No.
In the bit? Okay. Should we make it a goal that we have at least one in each city? And maybe, and I'm just like rubbing my rear end right here to come up with stuff here. But, you know, and then maybe one per 100,000. So what I'm saying is one per each city. Mm-hmm. So Monsterino gets one. Mm-hmm. But, and then say, and then at least one per 100,000. So then if you're in a city of 300,000, then you have at least three. I'm just taking a stab at this to ask
No, I think
question.
That's an excellent thing.
But do we have a goal?
We are working on developing a goal, yes. And in addition to what you're describing in terms of population and the number of cars, we're also looking at distances traveled. So there might be some areas that have more because they're just large geographic areas. So our goal that we had been working on previously was one every 10 miles. So that's something that we will be working towards.
The fast chargers.
The fast chargers. Mm-hmm. And so some areas are easier to do that. So there's really good fast chargers, say, for example, along the 101 corridor. But along the Highway 1 corridor, there aren't really any from Half Moon Bay all the way down to basically Santa Cruz. And there are many challenges because there just aren't good places with good access to electricity and capacity there. But that's our goal. So to your point, yes, we absolutely are working to put them not only in every jurisdiction, but also to ensure that they're along every highway corridor within a close proximity.
So I think, for me anyways, I think staff should go off and come back with a map of a stated goal that even deals with the areas you're talking about, Karen. You know, what are we going to do in that area between Half Moon Bay and wherever, you know, where are we going to put them?
And we also have a few slides later on that talk about other resources that are going towards supporting fast chargers and then where we can supplement and
fit
into what's
happening.
I just
think we need a roadmap, and if you're telling me we're getting to a roadmap, then that's great.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll shut up. Sorry.
So,
Rainey, so you had said in the charging infrastructure that currently we have 3,463, correct? The need's 12,397. What's the cost, the total cost of doing such a thing? And then what are the plans to fund it? I know there was the VW settlement. Can you give me a little bit about the cost?
Yeah, so for fast chargers, the prices were on the table on the earlier slide, so I can pull that up for your reference. A lot of it depends on what the location is, but the DC fast charging is considerably more expensive to put in. PG&E is planning some focus on fast charging. Volkswagen is doing that as well. There's a slide later that gives the best numbers we have on what they're planning. So I don't have the calculation here, but if you multiply that out, we can.
It's roughly somewhere between 60 to the high 100 millions to get the region fully built out. And a lot of that depends on the piece of infrastructure you select and how difficult it is to basically install the backbone. So the EVSC, the thing that goes on the pedestal, that's probably the cheapest part of your cost. It's the transformers, the lines, the transmissions, the other stuff that goes along with it, the trenching. So, you know, the number is high. And that's why, you know, as we've had these conversations with the board down through the years, we can work as a catalyst in this area. Even with the funding we have, we're not going to be able to, affect that transformation on our own. So Rainey will go into the coordination that we do, but we understand that we are a portion of the solution, and we are working towards that goal. So it's getting the other folks to buy in, and we've had a lot of success in that area. So I think if you kind of let us pace through it, we can go back and get to these questions afterwards.
Chairman Hudson?
Yeah, I want to go back to the goal idea. I think mm-hmm. you're probably going to have to bring in one or two or bifurcate what the solutions are. And I am not picking on the chair of Mobile Source when I bring this up. One of the values of him telling us this story was when he went to the charging, first of all, card didn't work. Second of all, you're looking for a place where you can put in the charging near a freeway off-ramp, because if your charge ends on the freeway at 4 o'clock on 680, you're going to be there a while. Third, and this was what really resonated with me, is he could pull in the car, charge it, and then go somewhere, get something to eat, come back, and it's done. So I think it's all of those components that you really want to look at. I know when we get to the TIO first meeting, one of the first things I'm going to bring up is this guy that came before us for a grant 2 or 3 years ago, Keith Malone, for the hydrogen. I go, wherever you have a hydrogen plant, would it be that tough to put in electric charging? And, you know, do it all at once, and then the key thing becomes how do you identify it from the freeway. So it's all four of those components. It isn't going to be just the cities, because we have 19 incorporated cities, but we must have another 19 unincorporated cities. And I don't want to get into a battle for 50 of these darn things, but I think it's all of those things for the roadmap that we're going to look at.
Mm-hmm. So it should be noted, though, too, on that day that I ran out of a charge, I was told to leave the 580 corridor and cut over to the 99 corridor to get to a charging station. So I was told to get off to a major highway, the 5 corridor, cut over and get on to the 99, which is where the charging station was. I mean, that shouldn't happen.
It should be at both places.
Right. It should have been on the charging station, should have been on the 5 corridor, which eventually, once the tow truck then finally got me, I gave him 340 large. He towed me then down to Tracy, which is back on the 5 corridor, but it was much further down, mm-hmm. to a charging station that did not take credit cards. It only took that special kind of card, which was, I guess, a violation of law, I guess.
Our goal is to minimize those kinds of scenarios, mm-hmm. definitely. Another goal is around the disadvantaged communities. And so this map in the center shows the distribution of electric vehicles right now per 1,000 people in the Bay Area. And you can see in some areas it's quite a lot, and in other areas there are virtually none. We have this side-by-side for a little bit of context with the CARE map, as well as the Cal and Viroscreen areas that were identified, as well as a snapshot of, you know, early 2011 PM 2.5. The main message here is that our goal is really about equity in access to technology and the benefits that come with it. The air pollution is coming from all the vehicles driving around the Bay Area. So while there are benefits, if anyone switches from a gasoline vehicle to an electric vehicle to the air quality, we're really interested in the equity component as well.
Well, and again, we know we have to get the chargers into the apartment mm-hmm. complexes.
Yeah.
And that's going to be done through incentives, you know, of getting the charging stations in there. Mm-hmm. So, and also probably incentives to buy the cars too. I know. I'm sure you are.
So we talked a little bit about the ongoing and the future planning, but we did want to rewind to 2013 when the Air District, along with other partners, developed the Bay Area EV Readiness Plan, and that included strategies to accelerate adoption, to support local governments, to provide information related to siting, and to coordinate across some of the regional agencies. So I will come back to the plan. I think it's been a useful document so far, but the market has accelerated faster than I think anyone really, or most people anticipated. So I think that's why it's important to revisit this and also continue to keep it the planning and ongoing process. The Air District investment in technology so far, so these numbers represent 2011 to 2017, $11 million into charging infrastructure and light duty vehicles, and then there's an additional maybe $50 million on the medium and heavy duty vehicle side. So it includes, you can see the number of chargers, number of fast chargers, as well as the number of vehicles supported. We're revisiting this slide again because it has two messages. One is to show the current distribution, but also to show in green the Air District funded chargers within the map of all the publicly available chargers. So it's about a fifth of what's out there. That number is growing because we have applications that are coming in and getting approved. So the Air District has played a large role so far, and as Damian was talking, I think we need to continue to play a large role and also work together with others.
Can I ask questions while we're going along?
Yeah, go ahead. Director Mitchell.
Hi. Okay.
Hi.
I'm looking at the 680 corridor, and we've got level one and two charging stations, but I don't see a lot of green leaves, which means no Air District funding. Is that because people haven't applied? So we need to get the word out more, yeah. Mr. Hudson, you and I, in Contra Costa, that people need to apply for funding. All right, thank you.
Yeah. Director Mischoff, I think that's a really good point. We'll talk about the outreach that we're doing now, but we do realize that there are gaps in who we're connecting to, and if you can recommend people for us to follow up with or pass on information, that would be very helpful.
Well, as you're making a presentation, I'm thinking of my hometown of Pleasant Hill, which is very proud that it has electric charging at its city hall and our large parking structure. But it makes me wonder if those are the old, I know they're not the fast, and so I know I want to reach out to them and obviously the city of Concord and others to do that. So I know you'll work in coordination. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Another point here is that we're looking at what the right balance is between level two chargers and fast chargers. In some cases, level two chargers are fine and are very cost effective if it's a workplace or a home-based charger. So that's part of that planning process. And as more and more people adopt EVs, that the behaviors may shift and change as well. The early adopters may have different behaviors from the rest of the consumers. So it's an ongoing question. So the outreach and partnerships that we've been doing so far, there's a quarterly coordinating council meeting that the Air District has organized over the last few years, and it covers various topics related to trends in technology, policies,
who's on
applications
that
and
or
technologies.
Can you get us a roster?
We can. Yeah, it's a large list of contacts.
So if you look there at the bottom of the slide, there's over 1,000 regional contacts on there. There's all of our cities and counties, and these meetings regularly have 40 or 50 attendees and another 40 or 50 on the phone. So a lot of participation by cities and counties and by actually by some of the folks who are supplying the EVSCs and the vehicles.
I don't need a roster. As long as you see, when we talk equity, I know what we're talking about. Yeah. I want to look at equity in the sense of are people from each region participating in those to get the word out?
They definitely are, but one of the things I would point out is that folks, even within their own cities, may not be bringing back the information to every group. So that's something that we're going to focus on with this group to make
sure. And that's what's helpful. When we know that, we can sort of make some follow-up phone calls.
Yeah. So one of the things we'll be stressing at our next meeting is that folks should be reaching out. And one of the areas, and we've heard it loud and clear from this committee, that you want focus on multifamily dwellings and you want focus on housing that serves lower-income communities, and that's something we'll be stressing as part of our next meetings with this group.
The other component of outreach is providing information about Air District programs and activities at various organizations, events. So the middle of the slide includes some examples of events that we've either sponsored or participated in including the types of organizations. So local government, coalitions, facility managers, building owners, a lot of the local NGOs, technology developers, not just vehicle and charging, but other related sensors and apps that support the market. And then Damien already alluded to that there's a group of over 1,000 contacts that we provide updates when there are events or information about incentive programs. So one opportunity, speaking of technologies that enable the market, I wanted to introduce this app. It's developed out of Lawrence Berkeley National Lab, and it tracks an individual's driving patterns and allows you to pick potential vehicle models and compare fuel costs, greenhouse gas emissions, the various costs of ownership by year, total costs, and whether the battery range for a vehicle can meet a specific consumer's driving needs, and also what are the available incentives for those vehicles. So I would definitely encourage you guys to check, to look into this app, spread the word about it. We're also supporting this project as well, so that the data that they collect, we can use it to understand consumer preferences and behaviors a little bit better, and also make sure the app meets the needs of potential consumers that we'll be reaching out to. Yeah, question?
Do those costs mean what they're paying for insurance and whatever little gas they have to put? I mean, that isn't the cost this of the is car. This is the operation of
this
the car.
This is the total cost, including the upfront cost, as well as maintenance, fuel, charging. And then in this screenshot, it's divided per year. So, you know, it assumes some.
So if I bought a 2017 Chevy Bolt, that $6,482 includes perhaps my monthly payments for the car too?
Yeah, it does. And I would say I want to be careful here and point out that this is for one driver. So the numbers will be different.
How
for
can
you.
It be for one driver when you have all those different cars listed?
It's for one driver showing all of the different vehicles that person could drive, but it's based on how much miles that person drives in
a
day.
Okay, thank you.
So,
yeah, because a Bolt owner is not going to put any gas in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But the idea is that this is your Bolt. This is how much it's cost multi-operation versus, you know, the Chevy Equinox or whatever it is.
Okay, thank you.
Right. And there are a lot more vehicles that are available, and it uses statistics about the costs and the efficiencies of the vehicles to make these calculations. So we talked about some of the other regional programs that are happening. A big one is PG&E, where they've committed to invest $130 million over 3 years supporting level 2 make-ready infrastructure for workplaces and multi-unit dwellings. And they have certain criteria for the number of stations at a specific location, as well as a 20% commitment to disadvantaged communities. That opened in 2018, and we're in close contact where we're sharing information about maybe sites that don't fit their situation. They're passing it to us, vice versa, in some cases, combining the funding together. They also have some future programs that they're planning as well, focused on fast charging fleets and some other specific grants.
So maybe I'm just cynical when it comes to PG&E, but you know, quite frankly, that's the ratepayers' money. I mean, it's not like they're a social service agency here. So, I mean, that's my money.
That's their PR.
But, yeah, that's just making them look good. But anybody else?
I got a quick question. Rainey, you have 50-plus fast-charging plazas. Mm-hmm. What do the plazas look like?
Like a gas station. Okay. So with multiple locations to charge, but instead of gas, electricity. With PG&E's program and with Volkswagen's program, we don't have details yet on what the scale of it will be and the exact locations and the layout, but that's the overall vision.
Can you get back to us if you do find out? Let me tell you why. I want to see. I mean, I would assume, would it be amenities based? Like, would it be what would be within that plaza? I mean, because sometimes you need to drive people to a location.
Yeah.
And so I'm curious to what's in the plaza. I know they're going there to, you know, to get their car charged, but what other amenities are going to be within that plaza? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, what we do know, I don't know about PG&E, but Electrify America, which is what came out of the Volkswagen settlement, they are talking about connecting the fast charging with existing stations already and building out from the restaurants and the gas stations that are already in place.
Director Abikova.
Thank you. So you mentioned multifamily dwellings and also workplaces. In terms of the policy side, is there an effort in trying to encourage, like I'm thinking of when we have redevelopment projects or apartment projects coming in, we don't require it. Right now the developer often is offering to include it, but are we getting to that point where we are going to be or have policies to require these?
So California has updated building codes so that it requires make ready for a certain number of locations within new facilities. And then we've also been working with some partners locally to think about model ordinances that could support for new or new buildings, new construction or renovations. This is jumping ahead a little bit to some of the punchline on the last slide, but I think the opportunity for the Air District could be to focus on the existing buildings.
Sure, when they renovate or, okay, great, thank you.
All right, so the we talked about PG&E, Electrify America. So this came out of the Volkswagen diesel emissions suit. It's overall a $2 billion program, 10 years. $800 million is supposed to go to California. In cycle one of that, it's $200 million for California from 2017 to 2019. Which seems like a lot of money, but you divide it up and it goes really quickly. So there's about, our estimates are about $9 million for non-highway infrastructure in the Bay Area, and then $75 million for 50 fast charging sites across California, which would include some of the Bay Area.
Almost just one in each county. I mean,
yeah.
You divide it up.
Yeah. So it seems like a large amount of money, but it goes quickly.
Are some of those dollars allowed for planning? I know we need planning, but it would be nice that if it, never mind.
Mm-hmm. No, unfortunately, this is a hardware program, and this is a stipulated settlement for somebody who's in violation of air quality standards. So no planning money. They've got to do the planning themselves.
They are doing a big push on awareness, and so they've been in touch with us where they have a number of events and have invited us to provide information about Air District programs at those awareness events. So a lot of the funding, after you subtract out everything, is going towards awareness.
Director Groom.
Thank you. I want to follow up on what Margaret said. Exactly how will the planning take place, and will the local governments be consulted?
That's a good question.
Will the positioning be the right place? You know, I mean, I think it's real easy to plop them down, but the local folks know the easiest places to get in and access in and out. So how do we have a clue how that'll all work?
They have been engaging with local governments and regional agencies. So as an example, they're now planning for cycle two, and they've opened up a comment period for anyone to submit comments. The challenge is they don't have a lot of details in their plan, so it's hard to give specific comments.
Well, I think, you know, in that case, I think maybe it would be important for us to know who's on some of these planning committees. Like, for instance, we have an Office of Sustainability that now takes care of all of this. Have those folks been in touch with that office? I mean, we can find that out, but it would really be nice to know.
Yeah. At the meetings we've attended, it's been pretty well represented with people from different cities and counties. They're keeping the list of contacts that they're in touch with, but if...
too many mics on.
Too many mics.
So stop.
Sorry, we can, if you have contacts, we can help make the introductions with the Electrify America team.
Okay, so first of all, staff, in their infinite wisdom, scheduled another committee meeting in 12 minutes, which I dislike, but so now we're rushed. But so keep that in mind. But Director Jew,
I just wanted to answer Director Groom's question about the kind of engagement of the city. So the Electrify America group has been engaging with kind of the cities where they plan to put their charging stations. And so the one thing to be careful is we don't get to direct them as far as where they install these stations. They have to work with the cities, and they know they have to because of the planning and building code and for those reasons. But, you know, their list of sites is kind of a proprietary list that they haven't even shared with any of the cities as far as where they want to install, because it's based on their business model. And so they're looking at multifamily dwellings. They're looking at kind of different municipal sites and shopping centers, and they're kind of keeping those lists close. And then when they're ready, they're going to share it with the cities and say, okay, we're ready to go. Help us if you can.
Okay.
One of the things we've suggested to Electrify America, my voice is really loud, is that for sites that they've considered and didn't work out, that they share it with us so that we can look to find. I think Director Jew is alluding to it's been a challenge to collaborate when we don't have a lot of information about what they're planning.
Okay. Director Mitchoff.
Well, Director Jew more or less answered my question, but now I'm going to follow up. Sorry, Scott. So there's this entity out there called Electrify America. So the stipulated dollars went to them to figure out how to deploy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just how it is.
Yes. There's also over 400...
As opposed to CARB, which would have been...
Yeah. Well, no. So Electrify America is a subsidiary of Volkswagen. ARB, to the settlement, said, you are going to do the following.
I appreciate that, Damon. But as Scott said, we got a lot more.
Yeah.
It's a philosophical discussion for me, but I appreciate the information.
Yeah.
ARB is providing some oversight on this program. There's also a separate component of the settlement, over $400 million, that ARB is managing directly.
All right.
So the current programs that we have now, the charge program is open for another week and a half, with some funding remaining, and any help to get the word out would be great. We're also planning to open a zero emissions vehicle fleet program this year, and that would cover light duty, medium, and heavy duty together for fleet owners or fleet managers with a certain minimum number of vehicles.
So you said that's open now?
Charge program, the infrastructure program, is available now, and we'll keep you updated about the fleet program. It's open until March 9th.
And how long has it been open?
It's been open for a few months.
Since February of 2017.
And how's the response been?
We've awarded probably over $5 million over the last year, and 800 chargers, which I'll be covering here in a moment. And then also, this program will reopen. We're planning to reopen it. We need to come and have the board approve the policies and the funding allocation. But it is a program that we would be prioritizing, and so you'll be hearing more about that very
shortly.
How
are we doing with the apartments?
Apartments are one of the biggest challenges, and I know that it's a major focus for Rainey, and she'll be talking about that here, I think, in the next slide with the equity program.
I don't have the numbers here, but my rough estimate now is that apartments are maybe 10% of the funding, and we definitely want to increase that. The other aspect to the PG&E's program is that they're explicitly focusing on those, and they will come in and organize the installation. They'll pay for the make ready component. We're talking with them about coordinating our programs together. So this upcoming incentive program targeting low income consumers, we're talking about matching our funding for vehicles with other incentive funding or other programs to support charging infrastructure. So this, we've talked about this program before. This is an ARB-funded program, $5 million over 2 years, to provide between $2,500 and $9,500 to replace an older vehicle with a newer, cleaner vehicle, and that could include hybrid, plug-in hybrid, or electric. And consumers will also have the option for a transit pass. So we're currently finalizing that agreement with ARB now. It'll take a few months to set that program up, and then we're planning to do a small pilot to make sure our processes are all smooth before opening that up fully.
Have you worked with car dealerships on this?
We will be.
But have you talked to them about the program, maybe gotten any input?
You know, this program, we've been trying for about 5 or 6 years to get into this program. This program has been running in the south coast of San Joaquin, so there's a lot of kind of knowledge and experience that we can transfer from those. So as we go out, we have the benefit of that. So it's going to be interesting. This is going to be new, and we know, I think, that on the car dealership side, the easier it is for the customer, the better it's going to be for the program. So there were some changes in how ARB are actually allowed to let out some of this funding that we're hoping will help ease that process.
So as I understand it, somebody with a do they have to have a car to trade in?
Yes, there's a scrappage component.
So if they have a scrap car to come in and say the dealership's going to give them $2,000,
That will go through our regular scrappage program, and they'll get a voucher there, and essentially that will carry on to allow you to participate in this program.
Okay, so they get the voucher.
Yeah.
Is that the actual? Is that the money?
No.
So then the money they get through the grant is over and above the scrap of the car?
Correct.
Okay, so say they get how much for the scrap of the car?
$1,000.
So they get $1,000, and then they may get. They could get maybe another $3,000, and what's that based on?
Yeah, exactly
there's
right.
What's it based on, the amount of money they get?
There's a detailed table that we can share where it's based on.
Can you bring this program back for a little bit more detail?
I think we will be. Today was just to say, hey, it's coming. You know, okay. We haven't.
I think the committee would like to hear a little bit more detail on it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Happy to do that.
Make it its own item. Thank you.
The other component that we're
One more question. Yeah. When do you plan on rolling this program out?
We are finalizing the agreement with ARB, so that's the big question mark. It'll take us a few months to set up the program, the application system, the relationships with the dealers. We want to make sure that we have a good process and people trained up to work directly with the consumers, make sure the consumers are protected in this and make it as easy as possible for them.
And am I to understand that to participate in this program, you have to make $97,000 or less?
That's one example. There's a whole, the federal poverty level is a table based on the number of people in your home and the household income. Wow. And so it isn't a single income level that determines the federal poverty level. So there's a table for that. And then there's a table for, given your federal poverty level, what incentives are you eligible for based on your vehicle option?
I was going to say, you know, this is one program that's out there. The ARB's program for regular purchase of EVs is still there. It's open to anybody, pretty much, who's not buying a Tesla. Well, who's not making $100,000 or more. What's 150 grand is the top limit there. So there is a program that covers. Yeah.
So does that mean you go to the CARB website to do that?
Yep.
Because I'm going to continue to make my comment that even though with the federal poverty, whatever the level is, $9,500 to replace an older vehicle with a newer, I've been looking at these things. I don't know how anybody at a low income level. And I know you've said at one point they can buy used cars.
Used cars,
but they cannot afford electric, the PHEVs or electric vehicles. And
well, I think, I've talked to a car dealer on this, Karen, and I think they would disagree with you on that because the money that they're putting in the gas in their clunkers would make the payment on it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so they will disagree with you on this. They say the biggest impediment to this is the down payment and the charging station at the apartment.
That's so great to know.
Yeah.
It's not listed here, but we're also planning to talk with financing agencies who work at the community level as well.
And on your chart where you show the plug-in and the gasoline and the hybrid, the hybrid is half what the gasoline is, but it's still equal. So is it fair to assume that if you get a hybrid, you're just not polluting as much as a gasoline car,
that's correct,
but it's the PHEV where and all electric where we're really making the difference. Okay, thank you.
Okay, go ahead.
So the Air District Board in November approved a partnership with the Metropolitan Transportation Commission for a funding partnership that will include $5 million over the next 5 years that will focus on consumer awareness, partnerships, continuing that planning process that we mentioned, evaluating our programs and iterating on them, and it'll enhance the charge program and the low-income incentives program. And we're also continuously looking for other partnerships and other resources to support and expand the work that we're doing. So overall, looking at the market, there's a Bloomberg New Energy Finance estimate that has electric vehicles being cost competitive with gasoline vehicles in around 2025. That's the good news. The remaining challenge, though, is on the charging infrastructure and consumer side, that the lack of charging will continue to be a barrier. So I think it's a high priority for the board. It's a high priority for us as well. So looking forward, we're going to be continuing to evaluate the other efforts that are happening with PG&E, with Electrify America, and with ARB, and then coordinate the investments. I think the opportunities for us are going to be to add to the fast charging network, focus on multi-unit dwellings, especially the existing buildings, and also outreach, education, and as much as possible, decarbonizing the electricity, because that's where you're going to get the biggest benefits and resiliency from shifting to electric vehicles. So that's the end of my presentation. I can take any additional questions.
I personally have one more question for you. I'm an apartment owner, and I want to put in a couple charging stations. What are you going to give me compared to what the cost is?
So the charging funding levels are up to 3/4 of the cost of
this is a difficult question because we don't know how far the charging station is going to be from the existing electrical. But give me an estimate of what we're seeing as to what they're saying the average cost is to extend.
So to install a level 2 charger, if you just install like a single port in an apartment, it probably will cost at least $5,000. It could cost a lot more. It could cost $10,000.
Okay.
We will provide, I believe it's $2,500 right now for a level 2 charger. There are ways to make it more cost effective. you can install more than one charger. If you install a whole bunch, then you can help to amortize some of that trenching and the installation costs. And the charge program will still provide the same amount on a per charger basis. So so in a way, the more you install, the lower the cost. The other thought is PG&E is actually for multifamily dwelling because their funding is not based on air quality emissions reductions. Their program right now really is the best deal in town. If you're low income, they'll actually pay for 100% of the cost to install the charging infrastructure. They'll own and operate it, so it'll get installed at zero cost to the users of that. So for that reason,
are they going to charge for the electricity to the car?
They'll charge for the electricity, but I don't think they're looking to run it as a money making. It's just it'll just be part of your electricity, just like your washer, your dryer at your home. It'll be part of the cost of the HOA or the residents. So for that reason, that really is the best program, but it's something that Rainey, through the EFMP, that you'll be hearing about more soon. There are some opportunities to work that program through the Air District's funding.
Okay. Director Chu?
I just wanted to thank Rainey and the Air District team because San Francisco has been engaged in kind of developing a citywide electric vehicle mobility strategy for our city, and they've been at every meeting. Every 2 weeks, we've been having just to kind of develop that. So just want to thank staff for participating.
Okay. Lots of questions we've been firing at you. You held up well. Thank you. All right. Okay, so this is just an information item, I'm assuming. So
correct.
We'll move to item six.
Agenda item six is our annual overview of our Air District Grants Program. This is kind of where we give you a barometer of where we've been over the last year and kind of set up the discussion that we'll be having about allocations of funding and priorities for the upcoming year. And Karen Skolnick, our director, will lead us through the program.
So in the interest of time, it's probably best if we hold our questions till the end. So Karen, you're going to...
Great, thank you. Good morning, Chair Haggerty and members of the Mobile Source Committee. So as Damien mentioned during this presentation, I'll be essentially providing an overview of 2017, some of the highlights. I'll also provide some greater context, a five-year review, and also be concluding with our priorities and funding projection for this calendar year. So just for introduction, the Air District regulates stationary sources. We don't have regulatory authority over mobile sources, so for that reason, we do use our incentive programs as a way to try to target emissions reductions from that sector. The chart on the left, this kind of comes out of some of the requests from the committee earlier this year. The chart on the left shows emissions in the Bay Area, and we see that based off our inventory, that about 667 tons of emissions are being generated on a daily basis, and 53% of those are from mobile sources. So that's really what we're going to be focusing on today. The chart also shows how those emissions within mobile sources are broken down, and you also see introduced there are funding sources to target these emissions. This I call the octopus slide, and what this shows is the $57 million that were awarded last year and the funding sources that we have to then allocate to these various funding sources. And the reason why this approach is helpful is that many of our funding sources are overlapping. So, for example, with the heavy-duty trucks, we can fund those through Carl Moyer Mobile Source Incentive Goods Movement Program and our Transportation Fund for Clean Air, as well as other types of funding that we get. So for that reason, this is one of the best ways to kind of show that information. For introduction, Transportation Fund for Clean Air, again, that is DMV fees. $9 million, or 40% of that fund, goes to our congestion management agency partners through the County Program Manager Program. CMP, which has a similar acronym, that's a Carl Moyer program, which is a voluntary program that is in partnership with the Air Resources Board and the other 35 air districts in the state. Goods Movement Program, we are currently in the last year. That was a five-year funding program to target emissions from freight. And finally, the MSAF program, the Mobile Source Incentive Program, that's also DMV funded, and that accrues approximately $11 million annually, and it acts like Carl Moyer. And then finally, we do have a variety of other sources. We are constantly applying for other grants to the extent that there are opportunities out there. and I'll be covering that a little bit more here. One other highlight from the slide is that 58% of our funds in 2017 were awarded to care areas, which is a priority of the district, and we'll continue to focus on that. This slide shows how those funds were broken out by county. Now, what's challenging, of course, is that we're talking about mobile sources. So to the extent possible, we try to estimate the areas that will receive those emissions benefits, but in some cases, we're really only able to calculate based off where that vehicle is registered. So again, this kind of shows approximately where the funds were awarded, but it's not a perfect representation of how those funds actually benefit our communities. For Carl Moyer program, again, about $14.5 million were awarded last year. The majority of the funds last year were awarded to locomotive projects, which is really exciting. I'll be talking a little bit more about that and as part of our highlights. And I, just in the interest of time, I am trying to work through these, so I don't mean to be speaking very quickly. Let me know if you want me to slow down. In terms of mobile source incentive fund, again, that acts like the Carl Moyer program in terms of the eligible project categories. About half of those funds were awarded to our vehicle buyback program, with the rest of the funds going to fund our allocation for Caltrain electrification. So at this point, we've awarded, including last year's funding, 19 out of the $20 million that were allocated for that program. And also, we started up the lower emission school bus program last year, which you'll see more awards coming through this year. Also, in terms of the goods movement program, we are now in the final year of it, but last year, $8.3 million were awarded for replacement of on-road trucks. In terms of the Transportation Fund for Clean Air program, this chart shows the breakdown of that funding, nearly $13 million that was awarded directly through the Air District, in addition to the $9 million, again, that was forwarded directly to our congestion management agencies that also administer TFCA funds. The majority of the funding last year did go to support the electric vehicle charging stations, and continues to be a priority. And then the other half of the funds really went to supporting various different trip production initiatives. There's a chart here that we'll actually be bringing this back as part of an ongoing discussion, but there was a question earlier in terms of the emissions benefits from shuttles versus other projects. And what this slide shows, what this chart shows is, hypothetically, if you invested $1 million into each of these three different categories, so shuttles and ride sharing, bicycle facilities, and electrical vehicle charging stations, what you see is that they all have essentially similar cost effectiveness in terms of how we evaluate them here for our funding. So they would all reduce, as far as a project, hypothetically the same amount of air pollution. What you see stacked on top of the bicycle facilities and electric vehicle charging stations is the additional benefits that will accrue beyond the term of the contract. So for example, with the case of electric vehicle charging stations, we only require them to report data for 3 years, and that's how we do the calculation. But we know that most folks own their vehicles and will continue to operate these charging stations for more than 3 years. So hypothetically, if that equipment was in the ground for 7 years, the darker part of that chart shows the ongoing benefits that would accrue from that $1 million investment. Same thing with bicycle facilities. We only require them to be in place for 7 years from the contract. But we recognize that when you're building bicycle paths or even installing a bicycle rack, that equipment will be in the ground longer than the duration of the project term. Whereas with the shuttles and the ride sharing, the benefits really are just during the term of the contract. So that's kind of a relative benefit for those.
I know I said we can't ask questions, but I think I got to get in on this one.
Sure.
So, and being the chair, I'm going to. So why don't, since we're doing that, and I understand why you're doing that, and I understand that we're shuttle haters here. Yes, we are, because every time you guys get a chance, you take a shot at them. Why don't you figure out? I want to be able to articulate this. What the emissions would be if all these people that were riding the shuttles, that are say taking the ACE train from Stockton. went back to their single occupancy vehicle? Or all the people that are doing the ride sharing quit ride sharing and went back to their single occupancy vehicle? Why don't you figure that and then show what the bar would be?
Yeah.
Because there is a great benefit to keep those people in ride sharing and to keep those people on the shuttles as the last mile. Because if you don't provide that service, they're going to go back to their single occupancy vehicle.
Okay. We're just trying to provide you what you'd requested, but we get that. We understand that.
Shuttle hater.
So in terms of some highlights from last year, I just want to say we're really excited that electrification is something that we're very much in the beginning, in the infancy of this, but we're making good progress in these early days. So more and more of the funding is going to either extremely clean diesel projects, but also now starting to see pure zero, not only on the light-duty side, but we're starting to get it also on the heavy-duty side. So for last year, Rainey presented that just in last 2017, we did award funding for 800 new electric vehicle charging stations throughout the region, including 10 DC fast chargers. Last year, also, we were able to provide funding for the replacement of three locomotives. So two of those are going to be ACE trains, and then one Tier 4 locomotive at the Port of Oakland. And again, these are going from some of the dirtiest locomotives to what is commercially available, the cleanest technology. Also, in terms of trip reduction, bicycle facilities, we reopened that program last year. We also, I'll just make a quick plug for it, we have that program open currently, so we're currently accepting applications for bicycle facilities. We have $5 million available. That solicitation is going to close in mid-March. But we're very excited about that. We were able to award funding to 14 projects that are going to be creating 35 new miles of bikeways and also installing capacity for about 425 new bicycle parking throughout the region. In terms of wood smoke, we awarded $800,000 last year to fund 368 replacement projects. And also very exciting is the vehicle buyback program. We were able to expand the years of eligibility. So it went from allowing 1994 and older to allowing 1996 and older vehicles. So that's an exciting highlight for last year. In terms of emissions reductions, the nearly $46 million that was awarded directly through the district, so this doesn't include the funding that was awarded through the congestion management agencies. It awarded funding that resulted in about 470 tons of criteria pollution emissions reductions. That is equivalent to, so earlier I mentioned that there's 667 tons that are emitted in the inventory on a daily basis. So if mobile sources account for 53% of that, then this is roughly equivalent in 1 year of emissions reductions. It's equivalent to essentially taking every single piece of cars, trucks, mobile source equipment off the road, like essentially shutting it down for one full day. And so as you see, on an annual basis, our programs, together with regulations, help to sort of work to reduce emissions from the mobile source sector. And this is another slide that kind of shows, so the doubling that you're seeing here in terms of the emissions, the percentages, this again is because now we're only looking within the mobile source sector. So within the mobile source sector, passenger vehicles account for 23% of the pollution from that sector. And what you're seeing on the right is how our funding stacks and breaks down and works to kind of attack emissions from the various different contributors on the mobile source side. So again, the most significant emissions that we have are from on-road and off-road vehicles, and you're seeing that the majority of our funding is going to reduce those emissions. In terms of, I mentioned earlier that we're always working to try to bring in other funding. The other sources of funding that are included here that are not listed out include funding from US EPA that went to help, that's DERA funding to help with the locomotives. We also had funding from the California Energy Commission, which helped for installing electric vehicle charging stations, as well as ARB and MTC that also went to help fund electric vehicles and trucks. We had some funding from the reformulated gas settlement fund, the RFG, which helped to provide funding also for electric vehicle charging stations, and then ConocoPhillips and the National Wildlife Fish and Wildlife Federation, and that went to help fund the lawn and garden program that was an Alameda and Contra Costa County program. And then finally, you're also seeing the $2.2 million that were awarded through the district for the wood smoke program. And so in terms of this coming year, what we're going to be doing is there's our traditional sources, which are about $50 million. But in addition to that, we've got a new tranche of funding through AB 617 that you're going to be hearing about through other committees. And that funding, it will be used Carl Moyer-like, but it's going to be in targeted communities that are now being evaluated. But they will mainly follow CARE and some other criteria is where those funds will be spent. And in terms of our priorities for next year, again, 617 is going to be a major focus. 50% of our funds are going to be coming from the 617 program, so there's a lot of work there to provide funding for that program, and as well as a continued focus on our impacted communities. So these are our carriers, which are shown in purple on the right-hand side. And as I mentioned earlier, a major focus is now trying to provide funding wherever there are opportunities where the technology has advanced for pure zero emission, which is both funding it for converting our cars and trucks, as well as trip reduction programs, including shuttles, and trying to get people out of their cars altogether.
Can you go back to that slide?
Yes.
So since this is our program priorities for 2018, and I certainly support that, as I'm sure Director Hudson does, Chairman Hudson, would it be possible for you to take this map and take those care areas and show how much money we spent in each of those care areas last year so we can kind of see where we've come from and where we're going, and maybe present that map at the next meeting?
We can look at that, yes.
Okay. Other questions?
Board committee comments.
I understand that. I'll work off the agenda.
No, I'm saving here.
Oh, you're saving?
I get my light on early for a tranche of funding.
Okay. So I know the committee felt a bit rushed, and that's why some of them got quiet when I mentioned the time, and I'm sorry tranche. To do that. So I would just request that we not put other committees after this committee in the future, because this committee in the past has gone a little bit long and has asked a lot of questions, in my opinion, under the direction of Chair Mitchoff, asked a lot of great questions and did a lot of great work, and I want to continue that, and I don't want this committee to feel like it's being dumbed down. So please don't schedule committees after this in the future. And having said that, I will now move, if there's nobody else, I'll move to item 7, which is committee member comments, which is our chairman.
For one, if we'd kept the original chair of legislative, it wouldn't have been a big problem, but he's now just a member. I want to remind you of that. You're on it. You're one of the 11.
It's still starting 20 minutes late, and we still have, I know there's at least one director that asked a question, and then when I mentioned the time, said, no, I won't ask the question.
And I'm another one. I mean, I have a lot of stuff, but the best idea I heard out of today, I want you to follow up on, and that is that 5 should be a separate by itself. If you have to call another meeting this month because Mobile Source has many things ahead, I would strongly suggest you do it. Mobile's at the call of the chair, and I really would like to get what the suggestions are from people after the TIO initial meeting sooner than later. I mean, I'd love to have this stuff come up, suggestions that we make about the electrification in April. And that may mean that it takes a 2-hour meeting of 5 alone.
Well, we have a meeting March 22nd, and that should be good. Mm-hmm. But it would have been nice to spend some time on it today. Mm-hmm. And I, as the chair, felt very rushed, and I don't appreciate that.
Oh, so did I, whatever I am. I mean, I can sit here and talk about this stuff, and I left it out because I think you're right. This deserves to be not just a separate item, but maybe even a separate meeting if you feel... After you think about it, that this is what you want to do, I'd say call them up. And I'm looking at a lot of heads here shaking, saying the same thing. This should be a single item
on a committee meeting. Right, but I would remind you, you're the chairman, and all you have to do is say something to the APCO, and he'll change it.
Okay. Oh, as far as the ledge, that's done. It won't happen again.
Well, and I...
As far as the dual committees...
Yeah, it won't happen again.
And Ledge does not meet every month like Mobile Source does.
Yes. So something came up today. That's
this is an anomaly.
They can put other committees behind it, and they have. So, okay. Done?
That's a heck of a way to adjourn. Done.
Director Groom, did you have something? Because I don't want to cut you off. Okay. All right. So we are adjourned until May 22nd. Thank you. Yeah, March, May.
It's an addiction. Something's wrong with March. Yeah. The Ledge meeting will start in about 5 minutes, and you are at Ledge if you would like to stay, since some of what we're talking about will pertain to Alameda.